put the card down on the table. I'm a Roman citizen. I demand my right of appeal. So they had to honor that. And so now they've got to cart him to Rome where he can make his appeal before Caesar himself. So he uses that. He gets a free ticket to Rome. Now, we pick up the story. Paul's on this ship. They're docked in Crete, and that's the ship that's going to take him from Crete to Rome, sailing up the Mediterranean. He's headed to Rome. The ship is there on this island called Crete. But the crew has decided to overstay their welcome on Crete and their short shore leave. And instead of going when they were supposed to go, they keep lingering. They keep partying. They keep having a good old time. And Paul knows we need to get out of here, okay? And autumn is turning into winter. It would now become more unsafe for them to try to travel the Mediterranean in the wintertime. So God warns Paul and says, go tell the captain of this ship they need to wait till winter's over so you can make a smooth sailing trip up to Rome. But the whole crew becomes impatient now. They return to the ship. They don't want to wait. We're going to sail. We're going anyways. They would be shipwrecked. God told Paul, they're going to die. They're possibly going to die. So Paul passes on what God's revealing to him, and they totally ignore it. Just as Paul warned them, the ship gets destroyed in this huge storm. So here's the top of your outline. The ship struck a reef and ran aground. As it was repeatedly smashed by the force of the storm's waves, the ship began to break apart. That's the story of Paul's shipwreck. Now, just for the understanding of the concept here and the context, Paul was in three different shipwrecks in his lifetime. And that's just part of the stuff this guy endured, is the beatings he took, the imprisonments he took. I mean, how he continued to go only by the grace of God, because none of us has faced an iota of what this guy took. You talk about a guy on fire for God. So what does this story have to do with us? We're living 2,000 years later. Well, it actually answers three very important questions for everybody. First, what causes people to make bad choices and create setbacks and storms for other people around them? Because when you create a storm, you leave a wake everywhere you go. Number two, what do you need to know about the storms and setbacks that aren't your fault? What do you need to know concerning the storms and setbacks that aren't your fault? And look at that. Number three, what do you need to remember when you're in a storm that's wrecking your ship and you feel totally hopeless to do anything about it? I mean, everything's falling apart around you, okay? How in the world do you deal with that? How do you cope with that? And what do you need to remember when everything's collapsing around you? So what causes people to make bad choices, to make dumb decisions, and they cause setbacks and storms for everybody affected by it? Well, that's what this story illustrates. So here we go. We're going to write this down. Number one. When we listen to ungodly advice, that's your first line. Now, when you use the word ungodly, that doesn't mean that these are people who don't know Jesus. They could be people who are in the church, well-meaning people, but they're not tuned in to what God's trying to say. And they're going by their own emotions or their own feelings and projecting that into your life and giving you some advice that may not be biblically sound or spirit-led for your circumstances. Let me show you how this works. Acts 27, it says there, much time had been lost and the day of fasting had passed, so by now it had become dangerous to sail because of the fall weather. So Paul warned the sailors with this advice, men, I have perceived that our voyage is going to be disastrous. God told Paul that. And if we sail now, we'll lose the cargo, we'll lose the ship, and likely we'll lose our own lives also. Now, next verse. But the Roman officer in charge of the prisoners didn't listen to Paul. Instead, he followed the advice of the pilot and the owner of the ship. So let's look at this for a minute. Anybody ever give you bad advice? Yep. Have you ever been overruled by somebody that you felt like, well, I could trust that person? Yep. The so-called expert? Look out. As pastor, Some people use experts to validate their biases. Let me explain that. What they do is they go around asking experts, or what they think are experts, so they find somebody who will agree with them, right? And that's the expert that they will listen to. So they really didn't want advice. They just wanted someone to reinforce what they already wanted to do. How many times have we run into that one, right? So they'll exhaust every pastor on the staff until they try to find somebody who's going to say, it's okay for you to do that. Okay? Because they really don't want to listen. They want you to affirm a choice that they, your spiritual leadership, say, that's probably not a good idea. And when they collaborate and tell you that, and you go against it, the chances are pretty high you're going to have a pow when that all comes together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how that happens time after time after time. And others who will walk in and they try to portray that they want your advice, but they've already made up their mind. So it's really, this is what I'm going to do. Not, what do you think, or would you pray with me, or ask God to reveal to me what I should do? This is what I'm going to do. And we hope, and we really want you to bless us. Well, sometimes I can't do that. I'm not going to bless something I don't know that God is blessing. I'm not going to stick my hand in the middle of that. I'm the one's going to get slapped. So no, so don't come and ask. With that kind of an approach, because it's going to be, that's not the way it works. That's not biblical. So they didn't want advice. They want someone to reinforce what they want to do. Now, I don't want to belabor that. I just want to make a simple point. When God tells you not to do something, ignore those who are telling you to do it, because it's going to land in your lap when the stuff blows up, right? When we listen to ungodly advice, even among those that we think are experts, the captains, the pilots, who's supposed to know what they're doing, right? Careful. That will always lead to trouble. Next line. When we copy the crowd, when we copy the crowd, when we want to do what's popular, that's kind of the going thing right now. So maybe I'll jump on board that and I'll go with that. And that's kind of popular for everybody. What's popular? Let's go with the flow. Everybody's doing it. I mean, that's kind of the new trend right now. When we copy the crowd, verse 12, then the crew decided that they should go ahead and sail up the coast of Crete because the majority, circle that word, majority, the majority wanted to spend the winter in Phoenix, and it had a nice harbor, okay? It's interesting, 2,000 years later, people still want to winter in Phoenix, right? Am I in the right church? Right? It's a little different Phoenix, because this Phoenix doesn't have a harbor. So history shows that the majority is often wrong. Go ahead and do it. Majority said, let's do it. Majority is not always right. Story after story in the Bible, the 12 spies go in to spy out the land that God promised Israel. 10 of them come back and said, nope, we're not doing that. We can't handle that. 2 said we can, Joshua and Caleb. You remember their names. Anybody remember the names of the other 10? No. Why? Their names are listed, but why don't you remember them? Right? They ended up spending the rest of their lives walking in circles in the wilderness until that generation died off because the experts were wrong and they believed them, accepted it, bought it, and they all suffered for 40 years. The majority was wrong. Totally wrong. And just as often as the experts are wrong, the majority is often wrong. There were 276 people on this ship. And when they took the vote was 273-3. Paul and his two companions said, we'd better not do this. One of them being Luke, the physician who wrote this story in the book of Acts. Now imagine when they took the vote, the majority decided, we're going to go ahead and do it. Even though Paul, you know, Paul, we're not. Even though he says no, and even though he says, God said no. I imagine Paul's just shaking his head thinking, wow, you guys have no idea the storm you're about to head into. Let me ask you, can you think of anybody they've shipwrecked their lives because they followed the crowd, because they just got on board and hooked their train to that? Well, okay, they copied the crowd. They did what was popular. We see it every single day. The second reason people sail in the storms and shipwreck their lives, because they copied the crowd. You go, well, that's what everybody's doing, so I'm going to, like fun, I'm going to do it too. Number three, when we count on circumstances instead of Christ. When we count on circumstances instead of Christ. This is powerful stuff I'm giving you. When we count on circumstances instead of Christ. Dangerous. When we count on circumstances instead of Christ. Next verse. This means we're going to get into trouble. I don't know about you, but I try to stay out of the way of it by asking wise counsel, seeking the wisdom of God's Holy Spirit, by considering outcomes and what the biblical principles are involved in this decision I'm about to make. I'm not looking for trouble. I've had enough in one lifetime without adding any more to that. We're going to have setbacks when we start doing what I just described. We're going to run into a storm when we count on our circumstances. We listen to our circumstances more than God's word. Just because it looks good doesn't mean it is good. And that's how the devil will come to you. He won't come with the pitchfork and go, yeah, here I am. And you know, I'm going to hang out with you. He comes with something packaged that looks good. It doesn't look, that's not really bad. It's not like I'm going to go out and commit some gross sin. It looks like it's all right, but it's not what God wants. Just because it looks good doesn't mean it is good. So Acts 27, when a gentle wind began to blow from the south, the crew thought, notice the phrase, the crew thought they'd obtained what they wanted. They've got this gentle breeze blowing out of the south. And they go, this is great. Let's go. The crew thought they'd obtained what they wanted and that their plan would work. So they pulled up the anchor and they sailed as close as possible to the shoreline of Crete, the island. The question, have you ever thought that you were getting exactly what you wanted and realized later that you had headed straight into a storm? Anybody ever have that experience? Anybody? Who's going to be honest in the room? Yeah. Kaboom. What happened here? Another question. Is it possible that what you think you really wanted in life just happened to set you up for a shipwreck? I can't tell you how many people got shipwrecked doing exactly this. And they're still not back where God originally wanted them because it took them so far off course. When we pay attention to circumstances and we're not listening to what God says, what God says in His Word, how the Holy Spirit confirms His Word in the mouth of two or three witnesses, how those who are your spiritual advisors come alongside and they listen to what God's saying and what you're proposing, and they see if the two match up and go, we sense that this is the right thing to do. If you don't have some of these things in place, you're out on thin ice. Okay? We listen to what the crowd says. We do what the circumstances say. And it doesn't matter how favorable it looks. They found a favorable, gentle wind. Listen, just because something looks favorable, but God has already said, not now. Don't do this right now. Not yet. If you blow past that, you're going to sail into a disaster. And that's exactly what happens in the story. Have you heard this justification? Well, if it feels right, so it must be right. Yeah. You go by your feelings? Well, just follow your heart. You even hear Christians saying this stuff. Just follow your heart. No! That's the last thing you want to follow. Oh, I just want my kids to be happy, so let them follow their heart. No! You're a parent, not their friend. And you say, that's a bad choice. Why can't I follow my heart? Because it's desperately wicked. That's why it will deceive you. It will take you places you never wanted to go. It'll keep you longer than you wanted to stay. And you'll pay more than you ever thought was going to cost you in the long run. Never worth it. So they're looking at this, and they think it's good, it's favorable, and it must be good because it feels good. Don't go by feelings. Don't go by your emotions. Bad logic. I've noticed what people actually get when they get what they think they want, and they find out it's never as good as they thought it was going to be, and the whole thing begins to crumble around them, and the enemy has sprung the trap, and he's got you right where he wants you now. So why should I never trust my circumstances? Because circumstances and feelings change constantly. They're all over the map. They can change overnight. That's why you hear people to sleep on it before you make a decision, because you're going to wake up with a different set of emotions in the morning. They can change immediately. Acts 27, but shortly afterward, now they've already made the commitment to go, right? They pulled up anchor, off they go, but shortly afterward, they ignored what God said. Shortly afterward, the weather changed suddenly, and a wind of hurricane force came out of the northeast and blew the ship out to sea. Oh, joy. This is going to be a fun ride. Houston, we've got a problem. Okay? Yeah, we got a big problem. Right. So they're trying to go up the coast of Crete. Now they're blown out into the middle of the Mediterranean, and they're at the full mercy of a hurricane. So what am I saying? Listening to ungodly advice, copying the crowd, relying on circumstances, because it feels good, it looks good, is going to get you into trouble. You're going to find a storm. The next thing we learn from this story is what I need to know about storms. What do I need to know about them? Because if you don't know what storms and setbacks can do to you, you're going to find out in this story, and you're going to get manipulated into something that you wish you never got into. Very important we be aware of what storms can do to you in life. And you don't want to fall into this kind of a trap. So let me give you the three traps that storms create in your life. And they're all in this passage in Acts 27. I've only got about 5 minutes, and then we're going to have to stop to take some questions and then let you out of here. Number one, storms can cause me to drift from my goals. Storms can cause me to drift from my goals. Okay? I'll say it one more time. Storms can cause me to drift from my goals. Trust me, they'll do that. They'll get you off the rails, off track. You'll take a detour. Now, you made the choice, or someone else made the choice. You find yourself on another set of tracks. Remember the old train systems across the country? As they came into a city, sometimes there would be a spot where either automatically or by hand, they could switch the track, and you'd go off on another in another direction with that pivot point. Well, that's what this kind of decision-making does. It takes you off the main track where you were supposed to go. Now you're on some wilderness detour out here. And you don't know when that track's ever going to make a circle around and get back, if ever. Okay? You're really at risk out here. So in Acts 27:15, the ship was caught up in the storm, and the wind was so strong they could not sail against it. They lost all control, so they stopped trying. Now, these are sailors. And they gave up, and they let the wind drive them, drifting in every direction. Boy, is that verse packed with stuff. Look at that again. Because five ways that a storm setback will dominate your life. He says in that verse, first, in the storm, you lose control of your plans. You lose control. You're no longer under control, okay? You're not in control anymore. storm's taking it. Second, you stop trying because you're tired and you're worn out and you're fatigued. You can't keep fighting the waves and the winds any longer. That's two. Then third, you give up. You quit. Throw in the towel. You don't know what else to do. Fourth, you're pressure-driven. The storm is driving you. You're no longer driving anything. Instead of your purpose being fulfilled, you're under pressure. He said, the wind blew us wherever. And number five, you drift. You drift in every direction depending on where the storm is going to take you. What happens when you've chosen or someone else has chosen badly, and now it's taken you into the middle of a storm? And the little small voice inside of you, not God, your voice, starts saying, what's the use of trying? Why try to save this? How do I make this work? What's the use? I can't make any headway. Why make an effort? Is it worth it? These are all the things that start to manifest when you start putting yourself in the position to get into a storm. Let me get real about this. Have you ever let storms and setbacks cause mission drift in your life? Mission drift. Instead of staying on target and on focus, you start heading off in another direction. It may not be a big, major shift, but instead of being on focus, you start drifting. Pastor Michael preached a beautiful message talking about loss of focus when Jesus said, I am the way. There's no other path but mine, Jesus said. Have you lost your focus? When you lose your focus, you lose communication. You try to go against the wind, but the wind's taking you this way and that. In verse 17, the same chapter, it says, then the crew tied ropes around the ship to try to hold it together. Can you imagine? They're in the middle of a hurricane, and they're out hanging out on the sides of this vessel, and they're trying to rope everything around it. They're trying to pull ropes around it to keep the wood from collapsing and shattering and splintering. It's a huge storm. It's battering the ship from one wave to the next. I mean, they could sink anywhere out in the middle of the Mediterranean. And in the middle of it, I can't put yourself on board that ship, because they're going through this for 14 days and nights, nonstop, and you don't know from one second to the next if you're going to be breathing your last or sucking water down in your lungs. I mean, this is horrific. In the middle of this, they get these giant ropes out and they're trying to tie the ship to hold the pieces together. Now, I don't know how in the world they thought that's going to stop anything from happening, but they were desperate now. I mean, they're totally at the mercy of the storm. This is going to be difficult to do even if the sea were calm. But they're in the middle of a full-blown hurricane, 14 days of this. It shows how fearful they were. They try to tie ropes all around it. Let me ask you another personal question. What kind of ropes have you been trying to use to hold it all together? What kind of ropes? What kind of ropes are you using to try to keep yourself from falling apart? You better look at a better alternative than something that you think you can come up with to keep yourself together. You're going to need God to help keep you together. And yet, the sooner you fall on your knees and say, God, I can't fix this. I need you to fix this. The first thing you need to know is you're in a storm. Things are going to fall apart, and they're going to cause you to drift unless somehow you make your way to the presence of God. Do I have time for one more? Who said yeah? All right, I'll give you one more. Two, storms can cause me to discard what I value. And cause me to discard what I value. Okay, that's where I'm going to stop in just a second. Storms can cause me to discard what I used to value. Okay. In other words, your priorities and your values will change because the pain has gotten so intense that you're throwing everything overboard now. Your priorities and values change after a setback and a struggle. Things that you can't control anymore. Am I going to get out of this? When you've got pain, some stuff doesn't matter as much anymore. as other stuff actually matters even more. Because all of a sudden, pain sharpens your values. And all of a sudden, you thought, I'm going to pursue and I'm going to get. And all of a sudden, the pain gets so intense. You throw that away and throw that. Just give me the basics that I need to survive, right? All the more important things now bump up to the surface. For instance, if you ever had a long-term illness for months, well, you're going to start valuing every breath you draw and the health that you get every day more than you ever did when you just could take your health for granted. So in verse 18, 19, the next day, now remember, this is a 14-day storm. As the gale force winds continued to batter the ship, the crew began throwing all the cargo overboard. Now they start making choices about what's really valuable to them. Cargo goes first. Following day, they even threw out all the ship's equipment and anything else they could lay their hands on. Okay. Notice the progression. First, they throw the cargo overboard. They're trying to lighten the ship. Then they throw out the equipment they need to guide the ship and to control the ship. Then later in the story, they throw themselves overboard. We're going to jump in the water and swim for it. So storms not only cause me to drift and cause me to discard, we start throwing stuff away, stuff we didn't really need to make it, right? Some of that stuff is valuable in its own, but never make a major decision when you're depressed, because it will almost always be the wrong decision. I said, never make a major decision when you're depressed, because it will almost always be the wrong decision. Another person put it like this: don't try to make a major decision with a broken decision maker. And when you've been hammered, injured, damaged because of some great storm in your life, don't try to make another major decision. Get help. People who have objective biblical understanding, who've got no skin in that game, they haven't taken the losses you have, not in that situation. They have had their own, they've come through their own storms, but they can look at the whole circumstance you're in objectively and say, that is only going to make it worse. Sometimes the only thing you can do is just sit still and trust God. Still and know that I am God. Though the winds are roaring and the waves are high and the mountains are shaken, what, there is a river, the streams thereof make glad the city of God. God is in the midst of her. I'm not going to get rocked. I'm going to be okay if I trust him. You got to clear all the other stuff away and say, you try to, in the panic, make a major decision. In the middle of that, it's going to make the storm worse. You may never survive it. And we've watched person after person go, never to return. Gone. Questions, comments, observations. Now I got to stop here because we're